Welcome to RBG Beyond Notorious. This is the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the CNN film RBG and explores the life of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm Poppy Harlow, and I'm joined by CNN's chief legal analyst, Jeffrey Toobin. And in our last episode, we talked about RBG's first decade on the court. But even before she made it to the Supreme Court, she developed an unlikely friendship with a rising star conservative named Antonin Scalia, a colleague with whom she later would serve on the bench. A very special conversation with his son, Eugene Scalia, is ahead. But first, a very special conversation with Jeffrey Toobin.
Hi, Poppy.
Who is here as always. You know, she said about Justice Scalia, "I loved Nino, but I could have strangled him."
Well, I mean, that was the remarkable thing about their friendship, as Gene will no doubt tell us, because he saw it firsthand, is that they did disagree about so much about what the Constitution means and the results in individual mm-hmm. cases. But they were close friends, and their families were and are close friends. And that kind of friendship, it was never all that common in Washington, but especially now is very rare and is something that when people talk about both Justice Scalia and Justice Ginsburg, their friendship is something that comes up all the time.
And this is during their friendship begins before she's on the Supreme Court. Their friendship begins when she goes from being this sort of firebrand attorney arguing gender discrimination cases, you know, six cases in front of the Supreme Court. And she is nominated to serve on the D.C. Court of Appeals. Talk to me about that and also sort of President Carter's role and view in all of this.
Right. Well, you know, before President Carter, the number of women judges, mm-hmm. the number of African-American judges was really tiny. Federal judges. And Carter made a special effort to promote diversity on the bench. But RBG was not his first appointment. And one of the amazing things about her appointment is that she was nominated to the D.C. Circuit, which is generally considered the second most important court in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, of all the circuit courts, the 13 circuit courts, it's the one in D.C. It gets the most important cases, second only to the Supreme Court. She was nominated in April of 1980. Mm-hmm. The Republicans could have stalled and not filled the seat, but she was confirmed in June. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's indicative of how the things were less contentious in those days. But in any event, she was nominated, she was confirmed, and relatively recently, and she was there when just a couple of years later, the new president, Ronald Reagan, mm-hmm. appointed Antonin Scalia to be her colleague.
And in that role, as she sat on these three judge panels, she was seen as a consensus builder, more so certainly than on the Supreme Court.
Right. And one of the interesting things about Justice Ginsburg's career is how and why she got more liberal when she was appointed to the Supreme Court. Because one of the reasons there was some opposition to President Clinton nominating her mm-hmm. to the Supreme Court in 1993 from more liberal members of the Democratic Party was like, wait a second. She spent all these years on the D.C. Circuit voting with Antonin Scalia and Robert
right.
Bork. Why do we want to appoint her? And, and you know, that was a legitimate question if you were a liberal Democrat. What has turned out is that she did become more liberal as a Supreme Court justice.
I recall her talking about her confirmation process and saying no one even asked me about, you know, working for the ACLU, for example, and how that would have been seen as so liberal, you know, or a big point of contention today. Here's another part of what she said during her confirmation hearings, where, again, she was confirmed 96-3.
My approach, I believe, is neither liberal nor conservative. Rather, it is rooted in the place of the judiciary, of judges, in our democratic society.
So,
yeah, well, you know, they all say stuff like this in their confirmation hearings. And you know what? Her approach is liberal, and it has been liberal. And, you know, I just think We ought to have truth in advertising.
There you go.
But, you know, in order to get confirmed, they all say, you know, John Roberts famously said he's just an umpire calling balls and strikes, to which I say he's much more like the commissioner of baseball. But, you know, they all try to minimize the political nature of
it. So let's talk then about the conservative justice that she became such good friends with and was in complete opposition to on their, you know, view of so much that came before them on the high court. And that is Antonin Scalia. With us now is one of Justice Scalia's nine children, Eugene Scalia. He's a lawyer who has served in various posts in the U.S. Department of Labor and the Office of the U.S. Attorney General. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So why do you think Ruth Bader Ginsburg and your dad got along so well?
Well, you know, to start, they had a lot in common. They were both born, grew up in the New York area. They went into the same line of work, right? You know, they're both lawyers. They ended up judges together twice, two different courts. And I think it's well known now. They shared some interests outside of work as well, particularly music and especially opera. And I think they both enjoyed traveling, too. So they were two people who maybe, despite some initial appearances, just had a lot in common to begin with. And I think beyond that, my father certainly respected her intellect, her lawyering. And I think he respected the achievements that that you've been talking about. Which she had had even before becoming a judge. So they had a lot in common. She's, you know, a formidable, impressive person. My father certainly recognized and appreciated that. And, you know, and then they just kind of hit it off. Why did two people become fast friends? It's not always entirely clear. People just click. They clicked.
You were pretty young by the time when they first worked together on the D.C. Circuit. Did you see them together ever?
Sadly, I wasn't that young at that point.
Yes, you were. You know,
yes, you know, they and their spouses, my mother and Marty Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg's husband, had a tradition, a New Year's Eve dinner tradition going back to their time in the D.C. Circuit together. I know I joined them for the first time. It would have been about New Year's 1988. I joined them for dinner, and my wife Trish and I often joined them at the Ginsburg's Watergate apartment over the years. And it was just a wonderful evening. It was two couples who were all fast friends. And it was fun to be with them, and it was heartening to me to see my father with a colleague he obviously had so much fun being around and speaking with.
Now, wasn't another secret to the New Year's Eve tradition? You know, Marty Ginsburg was a famously accomplished chef. I mean, he loved to cook, and he cooked very elaborate, complicated meals. And I don't think it's inaccurate to say your father loved to eat. Wasn't that also part of the connection between the two couples?
I think both things are true. I think probably all of them love to eat. Marty Ginsburg was just a wonderful cook. There's, I think, the Supreme Court bookstore sells a book still of his favorite recipes. And the other thing my dad liked to do was hunt. And so in the later years, Marty would do the cooking, but my father would often provide the meat.
Really?
You know, one year it might have been quail, another year
venison.
Venison, exactly.
Wow. You know, that's symbiotic. Wow.
So Justice Ginsburg, after your father passed, called the court a paler place without him. And she loved his sense of humor, and he had a good one. I mean, you know, you talk about the love of travel. They apparently rode on an elephant together in India.
That's in the documentary.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
there's video of that in the documentary.
So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
And Scalia jokes
it's a great photograph of them together.
Your father jokes that some of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's feminist friends gave her a hard time even for that because she rode behind him on the elephant.
That's right, and I gather her explanation is no, that it was a matter of weight distribution. And
right,
I guess
yes,
if weight distribution matters, there was a big delta between the two of them.
Yeah.
What about the politics, though, differences? I mean, you know, these were two people who were at the absolute top of their profession and, you know, very much associated with not just different results in cases, but different ways of approaching the Constitution. Would they interact about that, or did they simply just not have that conversation socially? Or was it something, or is it something that they just sort of all left at work?
They would talk about the law. And, Jeff, as you know, even justices that are known for their disagreements are actually in agreement more often than not. And I think in their case, additionally, Justice Ginsburg was not just a firebrand advocate before going to the D.C. Circuit. She'd been a professor, as my father had been, and she'd been a professor of civil procedure, which is just the rules of court. It's a kind of a dry area, but it's something that a lawyer's lawyer engages with. And so they really did have a shared interest in the law. They might arrive at different places in any given case, but it was still something that in many cases they approached in a similar way, enjoyed talking about.
So they had one really fascinating interview together at George Washington University, and she's sitting there on stage beside him. Listen to this exchange. Listen to your father here talking about her.
Besides which, she's a very nice person. She likes opera. You know, what's not to like? Except her views of the law, of course.
He would not shy away from, going into her chamber or her going into his chamber and disagreeing with, you know, the way you wrote this or what you argue here. I mean, they did have those sort of more tough exchanges, though, at the office, if you will, at the court.
They did. And, my father would seldom shy away from disagreeing, right? but nor would she. They were both thoughtful, forceful people, and but saw part of their job as lawyers and judges to, you know, share those views frankly, but not to make it personal. I think they recognized that they couldn't afford to do that. And my father, for his part, really enjoyed a good argument. In fact, if you couldn't give him a good argument, he might think less of you. So I think, you know, their differences in some ways deepened their friendship. Mm-hmm. He learned from her. And if nothing else, I know that he felt his ideas got honed and sharpened by hearing how she, somebody who would approach some issues differently, hearing how she would react. So that was they weren't friends despite it. They were friends in part because of it, I think.
Yeah, but there was this level of courtesy. I mean, we talked earlier about the VMI case, which is sort of Justice Ginsburg's probably most important majority opinion, from which Justice Scalia dissented. But my understanding is, you know, all the opinions are always circulated among all the justices, but Justice Scalia went out of his way to give RBG his dissent a little early so she could have all the time she needed to respond to it, which I thought was just such a wonderful example of kind of civility, but obviously Justice Scalia not sacrificing any of his beliefs either.
I think he just had a lot of respect for her as a lawyer and judge, and they were friends. And so where there were disagreements, I think he didn't personalize it. And I know she tells a story, too, of his commenting on her majority opinion and pointing out, for example, that she had misidentified my alma mater, the University of Virginia. That was at least one correction on her majority opinion in that case that she was willing to accept from him.
I think he said something like there's only one or something like that.
That's right. Yeah. She referred to it, I think, in a draft. She says it's the University of Virginia at Charlottesville.
Right. Let's listen to part of what she said at your father's funeral.
Once asked,
how we could be friends given our disagreement on lots of things. Justice Scalia answered, I attack ideas. I don't attack people. Some very good people have some very bad ideas. And if you can't separate the two, you've got to get another day job.
I think almost everyone in Washington, in Congress, in the White House should be listening to that, right? I mean, is that a civility that Washington needs to learn from these days, the friendship between your father and Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
No doubt. I mean, I think whenever you have two such important, accomplished people and who have a rich friendship like that, there's something to be learned from it. I think anytime, any place. And right now in Washington, sure, I think that their ability to engage on ideas and yet respect one another's abilities and maintain a friendship is an instructive lesson. And I think they would both heartily agree that we want to have people on two sides of an issue to explore what the right answer is. We do better through that kind of debate. And if you want that, then you shouldn't want deep divisions to arise simply from the fact that people look at legal or policy matters differently.
It was very kind of you to share some time with us.
Gene, thank you.
Well, that's kind of you.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Goodbye.
We should note that back in 2013, Jeff, a composer named Derek Wang wrote a one-act comic opera, because they loved opera, right? Inspired by Justice Scalia and Justice Ginsburg's unlikely friendship. A rendition of this was performed at the Supreme Court in 2013. And RBG talked about it when I sat down with her. I know she's told you about it, and she likes talking about it. Here's what she said in February.
There's a character, the commentatore, who is administering the test. And he is puzzled. He said, why would you want to help him? He's your enemy. And I explained, he's not my enemy. He's my dear friend. And then we sing a duet. The duet is, we are different, we are one. Different in our approach to the interpretation of legal texts, one in our reverence for the Constitution and for the institution we serve.
Has there been, Jeffrey, or is there now any friendship like this on the Supreme Court?
No. William Rehnquist, who was Chief Justice for a long time, kind of established the social codes that still prevail at the Supreme Court, which is that good fences make good neighbors. I mean, he knew how passionately they would disagree about cases. So his view was, let's just keep the personal interaction to a minimum. And one of the things, the cliches about the court, which I think is pretty accurate, is that it's like nine separate law firms, that they really don't interact with each other that much. And Rehnquist thought, and I don't know if he was wrong, that by letting all these strong personalities with strong views be independent, mm-hmm. you would lessen the friction that, if you look back at the history of the Supreme Court, was often terrible and poisonous. So currently, the relationships are much more polite, deferential, friendly, but there are not a lot of friendships on the court.
So we heard what she said about Justice Scalia at his funeral. What would he have said about her?
You know, I think very much the same thing. I mean, you know, neither one of them gave any quarter in terms of how much they disagreed. But, you know, as we heard from Gene and as all the evidence we've seen indicates, they just liked each other. I mean, you know, they were, you know, New Yorkers of the same generation, mm-hmm. with similar education, similar professional backgrounds. And as Gene said, they clicked and their families clicked. And more power to them.
And Marty cooked for both of them.
Marty's cooking was a good solvent.
There you go. Well, thank you for joining us on this 80s episode of RBG Beyond Notorious. In the next episode, we are going to talk about her as a lawyer before she sat on the bench when she was, in her words, a flaming feminist litigator.
She had the theory that injustices or the special privileges that women had hurt everybody.
Her story continues next. Don't forget to watch the CNN film RBG this fall.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.